Hi, I'm Gil Headley, and I'm the proud sponsor of the Anatomy and Movement Channel. Welcome. This conference is important. It's both groundbreaking and ground-building. Literally hundreds of thousands of us have gathered here to expand our experience of embodiment, and in so doing, evolve the embodied experience of our world. Embodiment is a practice that anchors us consciously into that which is common to us all, our human body. Regardless of our differences, and we have them, we all live out our lives in a body, and we're all connected by that shared experience. I've been developing integral anatomy for the past 25 years. I believe the human body is not a problem to be solved, but rather a gift to be received and explored. Integral anatomy is an approach to understanding the whole body, which emphasizes textural layers, continuities, and relationships. We notice differences not to create separation, but to appreciate that which unites us all. I'll be presenting here on the Anatomy and Movement Channel, as well as on the main stage, and I hope you'll join me to explore the heart of inner space. And for further study with me, check out my website, gilheadley.com. When you join my site, you'll automatically receive 3 free full-length courses because I'm on a mission to share what I've learned through my own deep exploration of the human form. And I'm certain that these courses will enhance and transform your own embodiment practice. I hope you enjoy the presentation.
So welcome again, everybody, to this Movement and Anatomy channel and the coming session from Gabrielle Revlock, who's going to give us a session on restorative contact, mindful touch for grounding and healing. Just a reminder before I introduce our presenter that you are on Zoom webinar format. You should all know that by now. That means you can't see yourself, but you are able to interact with us through the chat. Put any comments and technical questions in the chat, please. And any questions for our presenter, please put them in the Q&A. If you'd like to join us in the main room, then just raise your hand and we'll move you through. So without further ado, it's my great pleasure to introduce to you Gabrielle Revlock. She's a performer, a choreographer, a movement educator, and a creator of Restorative Contact, a mindful body-centered empathy practice. Described by the press as inventive, mesmerizing, and intimate, her most recent choreographic work is focused around the concept of embodied anthropology, the use of found choreography to reveal subtle interpersonal dynamics and cultural values. Her work has been presented across the USA, in Japan, Netherlands, Singapore, Hungary, Russia, and India, which is where I am. Gabrielle has been a practitioner of contact improvisation since 2003. She is on the faculty with movement research in New York City, one of the world's leading laboratories for the investigation of dance and movement-based forms, and is a facilitator of the Brooklyn Contact Jam. Without further ado, over to you, Gabrielle. I'm looking forward to your session.
Thank you so much, Maggie, for the introduction. Hi, everyone. I'm really thrilled to be talking about restorative contact today because this practice soothes me in ways that I've never consistently experienced before. And since this is just a talk, and chances are that many of you are experiential learners and embodiment seekers, I want to let you know that next Friday, I'm leading a free class sponsored by the Philadelphia Institute of Contemporary Art Mindfulness Program. It is a BYO partner. It is online, so you can join from anywhere in the world. As I see, we have a representation here today. So if anything in this talk resonates with you, please come and we can share info about that class in the chat, or you can feel free to reach out to me through the web. I am very easy to find and very friendly. I feel like I'll probably be smiling a lot, even though this isn't, it's not as playful practice as some of my other practices are. So let's begin with a short arrival practice. So start by just moving your head. And you don't need to look at the screen. You can even turn your chair or look beyond your device. You can stand if you'd like. Yeah, maybe in figure eights or side to side. And really see things. Let your gaze land on something. And notice its shape. Notice its color. And then start to let your eyes slowly graze over your environment, noticing lines and curves and edges, noticing light and shadow. And patterns, whether they're intentional, like in a rug or a fabric, or if it's just the way certain planes or shapes are grouped in space, repetition. Just noticing the essence of things and notice the space between objects, the negative space. And now I invite you to gently close your eyes and to notice where your attention goes when you do that. There might be a sensation in the body that comes into focus, or a sound in your space that all of a sudden draws your attention where you hadn't noticed it before. Can you feel the texture of the clothing on your body? Can you feel the directionality of the light on your face? Let's take a breath in through the nose and out through the mouth. And we'll do that two more times, breathing in and out. You can make a sound if you want. Once more, in and out. And keeping your eyes closed, I want you to bring your hands to your belly. Let your belly fall into your palms. And feel how one hand is cradling the other. Feel the breath, the movement of the breath, the warmth of this body to body contact. And I want you to walk your hands up your chest. If you need to take a peek, you can. So I'm just taking my top hand and I'm placing it over the other hand. When I do that, I'm really letting it rest on the body and mold to the shape of my body at that particular location. Let it arrive, let it rest, let it be. And then you're going to replace. So the bottom hand comes over top. So we're just walking our hands up our chest, noticing how the landscape changes, letting the palm mold to the body. And keep replacing, bringing the bottom hand over top, resting it. Maybe when you get to your chest, you can say your name, Gabrielle, or sound and feel the vibrations. Your voice. Maybe you feel your heartbeat. And keep walking your hands up. And when you get to your neck, again, just mold your hand to this shape of the body. Yeah, how do you do that? Maybe also saying your name again and feeling the vibrations in your throat. And then walking your hands up to your face. So placing a hand at each cheek, kind of cupping your face, letting your face fall into your palms or be caught by your palms. Relax the muscles around your eyes and around your jaw. Feel the warmth or the coolness. Feel the texture of your skin. And feel the resonance of this position. What is the essence of this position? Just surrender to this moment. And keeping your eyes closed, you can slowly lower your hands and notice what's changed. Is there an echo or a memory of the hands on the face, on the body? And I invite you to gently blink your eyes open. And as you do so, to try to hold on to this awareness of sensation. If you want to put anything in the chat, any reflection, that's our shared space. So I welcome that. But there's also no need to evaluate or put into words if you're content with where you are. So as Maggie said, restorative contact is a mindful, touch-based movement and empathy practice, which I've been specifically researching and developing over the past 2 years. However, it's informed by my 18 years as a professional dance artist. I'm curious if there's some dancers in the house. And I know, Maggie, you said you're a dancer. I'm not asking about professional dancers, just, you know, do you identify as a dancer? Yeah, great, yay. Such a wonderful way to be in the world. So as a dance artist, I've spent a lot of time being with the body and thinking about the body and being formed, being shaped by my studies of authentic movement, Tai Chi, Klein technique, restorative yoga, mindfulness-based stress reduction, deep listening from Pauline Oliveros. And all of these practices really help me to appreciate the benefits of slowing down and noticing. And there's one practice in particular that had a huge influence on me. You might have a hint from the bio, which is contact improvisation. So are there any other contact improvisers out there? Yeah. And some people don't maybe know. Okay, so yes and no. So those people who aren't familiar with contact improv, as the name perhaps indicates, it is a improvised social dance form where the dancers for the most part remain in physical contact. So Steve Paxton is credited as a founder, and I found this definition that I thought was really lovely. He describes it as a mode of movement which is relaxed, constantly aware and prepared and on flowing. As a basic focus, the dancers remain in physical touch, mutually supportive and innovative, meditating upon the physical laws related to their masses, gravity, momentum, inertia, friction. They do not strive to achieve results, but rather to meet the constantly changing physical reality with appropriate placement and energy. It's a long definition, but I think it's really inspiring. So much of that is present in restorative contact. However, there are some key distinguishing features. Restorative contact is focused on slowness and stillness. Yes, I can share that quote later. And restorative contact is intended to let the body rest in passive contact positions. So no participant should ever be exerting much effort. restorative contact is taught as a set sequence of postures that may or may not lead into improvisation. And the last thing is that it is intended for relaxation and grounding. When I first started experimenting with teaching this concept in a contact improv class, a student reflected that it gave structure to something she had witnessed around the edges of jams. Jams are the open dancing time. That people lounging on each other in pairs or piles. So if you go to jams, this is a familiar sight. If you don't, you may be like, oh my gosh. So this observation resonated with me and clarified that I'm interested in creating a formal structure for a casual body. That is a body that is relaxed and unshaped by technique, a body that can be recognized as being at rest. So this is an opportunity for people to rest collectively. So there is one other thing that's really influenced me, and it's not a somatic practice, it is the artistic process and my identity as a choreographer. So I'm curious also who else identifies as an artist, not necessarily a dance artist, but just as some kind of an artist. Does that resonate with anyone? Yeah, great. And it's okay if it doesn't either. So one of the best things about being an artist is the permission to create. And having the title of artist gives me a container to ask questions and engage in self-directed explorations. Sometimes there's a little voice that I hear that says, you can't do that because you're not part of a larger institution. Is that a familiar voice? And then my artist self says, yes, you can. And not only that, but it is my job to experiment. It is my job to ask questions. And it is my job to put myself in slightly uncomfortable situations because I know there is something to learn from it, which will help both me and my audience grow. So restorative contact grew out of a very specific performance that I've created called Sex Tape. Ooh, this is where the flashing lights come in. So if you Google my name and Sex Tape, about 2000 entries will come up. You don't have to do that right now because I will show you some of the video. And this may come as a relief or a disappointment. It is not as R-rated as it sounds. It is about intimacy. What are our associations of intimacy? And the story goes like this. A few years ago, I had the realization that I was searching for care in the form of physical contact from the people I was dating. This is not uncommon, but it got me thinking about who were the people in my life who gave me the most care. That was not those men. It was my family and some close female friends. So with this realization, the question I proposed to myself was, could I expand or reimagine what friendship could look and feel like and thus reorient my search for care? And here's where it gets fun. To make this work, I videotaped an intimate encounter with a male lover. And then I took that choreography, right? Because it's movement, it was a duet, to my friend Michelle, who I've known for over 10 years. And I asked her if she was willing to recreate it with me, move by move, detail by detail. So how does this proposal sound to you? If your friend came to you with this idea, would you say yes? Just curious. Nice. Yeah. Right. Sometimes people want to be asked, you know, a little bit of bravery combined with the willingness to hear no, sets you up for a lot of good things. Yeah. Nice. Well, we have brave people here. So we have curious people here. I'm not surprised. So this was the second time that I created a performance in this manner, drawing from a recording of a fleeting and relatively mundane, ordinary, unspectacular, familiar moment. And I've been calling this process embodied anthropology because it is a close observation of human behavior done by actually stepping into the moment and getting to know it from the inside. And I'm sourcing my own life for that research. And I'd like to read a quote of a review from the live performance. This was written by Carolyn Merritt for Thinking Dance, which is a really great dance writing site. So check it out, a plug for Philly dancers. She writes, "A gauzy sweetness hangs over the duet, conjuring the early days of a relationship where you could happily laze in an ever-shifting cuddle for days, where you offer not only your heart and your body, but the most precious commodities in our modern lives, your time, your attention, your presence." So her reflection really encapsulates the intention of restorative contact. It is a practice where we give our time, our attention, and our presence. Restorative contact helps us to be present in the moment, present in our bodies, and with the important people in our lives, including ourselves. So I mentioned that I have a video. I recently created this video. It's not a documentation of the performance. It was reimagined for the camera. It's set in an apartment. And I'd like to show you about a 3-minute excerpt. I just want to acknowledge that it feels a little odd to show the excerpt because it is a time-based work. And just like a restorative contact class, it reveals itself over time. So I'm still going to show you a bit because you'll get a sense of what it looks and feels like. But this is just a reminder that the very important variable of time is missing. Many people who saw the performance went through an arc of emotions, and that included boredom and discomfort. And then something changed, something settled, something broke. And I think, and that was not everyone's experience, but I think that those people who experienced that, they allowed themselves to watch in an embodied and empathic way, and their mirror neurons were activated. So let's get this up. Okay. Can you see that video? Great. Okay. So let's start. Okay, so the full work is 25 minutes and you can watch it on my website for sort of contact if you want. I learned so much by making this piece. I went into it really not knowing what to expect, and the results were profound. It didn't matter if I was in rehearsal or performance. The work made me feel relaxed, grounded, connected, and honestly, a little high. From audiences, I heard that it made them feel flesh hungry, and that people were seeing in the work either something that they had in their life or something that was missing. I had beautiful women coming up to me crying. I was like, this is amazing. So I felt an obligation to share what I learned in a participatory way. And as I alluded to earlier, I started to sneak these concepts into the contact improv classes I was teaching. And now I teach it as its own practice. So before I talk about what happens in a class, maybe Maggie, we can see if anyone has any questions about the piece or about embodied anthropology.
So there's one question, some lovely comments, and one question. So you recorded the meeting with your lover and then recreated the movements, or how did you do it?
Yes, this is not an improvised performance. We really wanted to sort of, in the recreation process, strip away the emotion and just do it a very task-based. So we spent a lot of time watching the video and just trying to be as precise with it as we could. Of course, this fellow was taller than me and Michelle is quite a bit shorter than me. So there were ways where we had to adjust things. But it was just a process of meticulously studying this video and trying to recreate it, really trying to remove as much choice-making as possible from it and to just do it and see what happened. And I think that having that structure for the project also was what helped me feel not too vulnerable in doing it. And that's also kind of what is behind restorative contact, is that when we have a structure that we're committed to, we don't have, you know, emotions will come in and out, but that's not what's guiding it. Yeah. Anything else?
And another sort of general question for these times: how are you adapting these touch techniques during this time when we're all so starved for touch right now?
Yes, totally. Well, I will probably talk a bit more about that later when I'm talking about the practice. I went right when I was kind of trying to launch more of these classes, COVID hit, and I thought, wow, that is some horrible timing for this thing that I feel so excited and passionate about. However, the artistic process supporting my ability to sort of flow through life and work with obstacles as opportunities, it pointed out something to me that I realized I had been taking for granted as a contact improviser. As a contact improviser, I'm comfortable going into a room and making contact with strangers. Guess what? Not everybody is comfortable with that. And it was really valuable for me to confront that assumption that is based on my history and my practice. So what has been really nice about teaching online, because I teach these classes on Zoom, is that people have an opportunity to practice from the comforts of their own home, to practice with a trusted partner of their own choosing, and to also practice with video off. And I think that all those provide really nice opportunities to welcome new people to the practice, people who may not feel comfortable going into a dance or a yoga or a wellness space, because this is really meant to be a practice that is for everyone. So I hope that any other questions, I'm just curious about the piece or embodied anthropology, because I will talk more about restorative contact.
There's one more question. I'm not quite sure the intent, or I'm trying to, maybe they can clarify the question, but when you were reciting, did you have a strong feel to take different behavior?
Maybe that's a question about like when I was doing the choreography, when I was recreating.
Okay.
I'm not sure if I'm totally understanding either, but I just stayed true and committed to the structure. And I just followed it as best as I could. And I let whatever come up and to just notice that. So that was sort of the approach, was really just relying on the structure. Yeah. So let me tell a little bit more about restorative contact. I think that's mostly why people are here. So in class, I guide people through a primarily floor-based choreography of touch and weight sharing, using various surfaces of the body. And while the structure is set, participants are invited to adjust the position whenever needed for the greatest comfort and ease. We work slowly and mindfully with care and respect for our body as well as our partners. There aren't any rights or wrongs. And like other mindfulness practices, we work with patience, a beginner's mind, trust, non-striving, acceptance, and letting go. And as I mentioned before, sometimes I lead people into improvisation, and sometimes we follow a set sequence. And I also include a speaking component in the practice because the voice is a part of the body. And it underscores the importance of listening. I call restorative contact a movement practice because choreography has taught me that movement and stillness go together. And in the practice, there are times when we are still and times when we move, either from my direction or from an individual's need to shift. And it's easy, I think, to dismiss these moments as transitions, but they're part of the sequence, with our own value and texture, how we slide and smear and roll are tools for us to negotiate body-to-body contact. They are not invitations to drop out. I think sometimes we miss out when we prematurely decide what's important and what's not. So anyone who appreciates live performance knows that everything is in the misspeak, the thing that falls from the ceiling. If I were to like knock something over, that all becomes a part of your viewing experience. And that's what makes it delightful and fresh and present. So the other way that I would describe restorative contact is as an empathy practice. And empathy is the act of not standing at a distance from someone and their feelings, but being with them. We already know that touch could be an indicator of support. Restorative contact takes that idea of a hand on the shoulder and it extends it. So when you feel the presence of another body, and it can be as simple as sitting side by side, it's a reminder that you are not alone. And this is really important to me, this sense of companionship. These moments of physically being with someone in a quiet way come too infrequently, in my opinion. And I really want to offer more opportunities for people to engage in this kind of mindful touch. Nonviolent communication, which is a form of compassionate communication, which I've also studied, talks about empathy having the quality of following rather than leading. And this is also reflected in contact improv. So in class, we may take on roles where one person is the leader and the other is the follower. But the thing is that a good leader is always listening to their partner. So to just repeat that part of the quote from Steve Paxton, the dancers do not strive to achieve results, but rather to meet the constantly changing physical reality with appropriate placement and energy. So this quality of listening is very present in restorative contact. And sometimes I'll describe that process of tuning and support in terms of comedy improv terms, something that I've also studied. Maybe some of you have heard of this concept of yes and. It's a game structure where one person might say, I'm going to the party, And then the next person says, yes, and it's going to be really big. And the first person says, yes, and there'll be dancing cats. And it just continues back and forth. So it's this agreement, yet there are opportunities to pivot, but without it feeling negative. So how this applies to restorative contact is that you make adjustments so that you feel comfortable. Your partner does the same. And then you can go back and forth as many times as you need. Yes, and until both people can arrive at stillness, a place that is mutually agreed upon. So a lot of people who practice with me have remarked on how connected they feel to their partner afterwards. I think there are many factors that I've already mentioned that contribute to this feeling, being listened to, the physical touch. But another element that I haven't specifically named yet is reciprocity. Reciprocity creates a social bond. It is very natural that when someone does something nice for us, we want to return the favor. And opportunities to give and receive deepen relationships, whether they're lifelong partnerships or brief encounters. All of our relationships benefit from reciprocity. And I really started to think about this when I decided to offer one-on-ones, and I was pondering, like, what does it mean to provide a service? And particularly as a body that's been socialized female and that has already been subconsciously trained to be a caregiver. I think there is a lot of value in asking people to play both roles, to be flexible and fluid. And my guess is that a lot of people here are teachers and facilitators and have firsthand knowledge on how that role enriches your life because it brings a sense of purpose. And it can also be a welcome break from being so focused on the self. So we all want to be seen, and conversely, the role of witness can be very rewarding. So I have a short exercise that Maggie has volunteered to help me with. So Maggie, because if we were in a meeting format, I'd have you do this with a partner, but right now we're just gonna practice with a different person, so you're not just only looking at me. So Maggie, maybe just look at whatever is in front of you. If you can see other people, that's great, or your space. And we're gonna practice witnessing this other person without judgment. Just returning to that awareness of shape and color and line, highlights and shadows. Maybe cultivating some curiosity. Who is this person? Noticing what you notice and feel what it is to be a witness. To give your attention to another without any expectations or judgments. To notice someone being. And just breathe into that. Be with that. Maggie, maybe you can just feel yourself being witness and how that feels. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Maggie, so much. You can bring them back. Thanks, everybody. I wish we could have done that in pairs. This is one of the limitations, but you can try it on your own. So let's talk about touch. I'm speaking for Americans here. We have a complicated relationship with touch. And I think because of COVID and quarantine, it is even more apparent than ever. People are suffering from touch deprivation, but our associations with and habits around touch are so embedded that we're missing an opportunity to get what we need. Many of us have been wired to associate touch with sexuality, romance, violence, or awkward physical greetings. And in order to expand our vocabulary around touch and replace those negative experiences, I think someone alluded to this in the chat, we have to create new positive experiences of body-to-body contact. Maybe some of you saw Dr. Bessel van der Kolk's talk, trauma expert and author of The Body Keeps the Score. He writes that in order to change, people need to become viscerally familiar with realities that directly contradict the static feelings of the frozen or panic self of trauma, replacing them with sensations rooted in safety, mastery, delight, and connection. So most people know that touch is an important part of human development and well-being, but they are extremely limited in terms of who they touch, how they touch, and why they touch. So we share a handshake with a colleague, hug a friend, kiss a lover, hold a baby. But if we only know a few words, how can we fully express ourselves? We are three-dimensional beings with skin, our largest organ, on every surface of our body. So restorative contact returns our awareness to the physical principles of touch, shape, weight, duration, texture, and the way that all of these elements can affect our physical and emotional state over time. Just more information on why it's important. Studies indicate that touch boosts oxytocin as well as dopamine and serotonin. These are the hormones associated with making people feel good. It also lowers cortisol levels, which are associated with stress. And one more quote from Dr. Van der Kolk, the most natural way we humans calm down our distress is by being touched, hugged, and rocked. It makes us feel intact, safe, protected, and in charge. And I just want to add that it's not just that we need touch, we need to learn tools for gentle, consensual, and non-sexual touch. There's a very interesting article that came out in The Atlantic a couple of days ago, so you can read it on my Facebook page. But basically, it's about decentralizing sexuality as the basis for our primary relationships. And the author writes about how there was a time basically between the 18th and the early 20th centuries where there were considerably different norms around intimacy, which allow for the possibility of friendships that were romantic. And some of the conditions that supported the flourishing of these relationships were that one, men and women were typically operating in different social spheres. And two, the categories of heterosexual and homosexual, which are so closely tied to people's identities now, didn't exist. So I thought that article was a really nice reminder that the way that we understand, value, and categorize our relationships is a product of our time. So does anybody, I'm curious to know people, if you have a meditation practice, you can type it in the chat, what anchors do you use? What anchors do you use? And if you don't have a practice, but you are also searching for the right structure, you can say that too. Mm-hmm. Mantra is the breath. Yeah. Yeah, so for me, I have struggled with traditional meditations, but I discovered through my practice of restorative contact that it's much easier for me to be still when I'm in contact with another person. So we're hearing some of these other anchors, and I just want to propose that we can also use touch. So when I feel the structure of another's body, the warmth and the weight in a seemingly abstract way, as opposed to like a hug or a kiss, which are heavier with meaning, it creates a sense of calm in me, right? I perceive a meaningless body as a receptive body, able to give and receive sensation without judgment or attachment. And finding ways to be in contact with another person that doesn't impose feelings, it makes me feel safe, supported, and grounded. So restorative contact can be done between any two consenting people because I believe that everyone should have access to touch no matter what their family structure, relationship status, or friend culture looks like. And I think that it can be really hard to ask for a hug sometimes, especially when it's not clear why we want one, or maybe it's not even clear that we need one. I think that everyone benefits from structure and guidance. And so that's what restorative contact offers, is a structure for when you're exploring something outside of your normal routine. So if people want to practice restorative contact, a few options are practicing one-on-one with me. This is, of course, extremely limited now because we need to be in the same space. joining a group class, like I mentioned. So there is a free class next Friday. It's listed on my website. And I also have a class, a drop-in class this Sunday. And then this is not exactly restorative contact, but at the beginning of quarantine, I really felt for the people that were quarantining alone, and I wanted to offer a practice for them that evolved into my weekly cardio and restorative class. So the restorative part is a lot of touch work, kind of some of the things that we did in the beginning. I also work with sound, self-massage, improvisation. And the cardio part comes from my observation that some people, myself included, need to like get some energy out before we can slow down. So I started doing this practice of cardio clapping. Okay, it sounds silly. However, the palms contain nerve and blood vessel endings, and stimulating them through clapping can improve the health of organs like the kidney, the heart, and the digestive tract. Clapping improves blood circulation and boosts white blood cells. It's helpful for people struggling with insomnia, anxiety, and depression. And I find that there's also something about the percussive element of clapping, which is really invigorating. And there's something just intrinsically joyful about it. So for me, I'm like, check, check, check. This is great. This is how I want to spend 20 minutes of every day. So I was hoping we would have time to do a little bit, but we don't. But I do have a class later today if you want to join, or some other Friday. Maybe the last thing I'll kind of say is that I am really interested in what are the applications of this practice. As Bessel van der Kolk mentioned, there isn't a lot of research on touch. This is a knowledge gap. So I can share some information about some of the people that have practiced with me, people that are differently abled, people that are trying to develop a new relationship to touch and the body. I've worked with some people who grew up in the evangelical purity culture. Also another person who identifies as asexual, who recognize that they have a need for touch, but to try and talk about that or engage with that with some of their community was confusing. So they needed a more open space. Also people trying to strengthen family relationships. So this is some of the people that I've worked with, but I have big questions about like, how can it be useful for grief? How can it be useful for pain management? How can it be useful for education, right? We're in a really horrible time, I think, with education, because there have been these transgressions of touch. Now so many schools don't allow any touch between teachers and students. And I really don't think that is the answer. I understand it's very fear-based, but we have to figure that out. We have to figure that out. It's the same reason that metal detectors in schools are not the answer. It doesn't make us safer because it erodes trust. So I guess we should see if there's any questions. Sorry, I have lots of things I like to talk about this, say about this. So yeah, any questions?
Lots of beautiful comments coming up in the chat. Question for you is how you just mentioned that it as well, but maybe you could explain more. How do you work with elderly people who may not have the flexibility or ability to handle weight? And have you worked with an older population?
Yeah, I mean, that is also a population I'm extremely interested in working with. That is a motivation for me, that one of my fears is I do not want to get old and not have access to touch. This is a strong motivator for me. And unfortunately, again, right before the quarantine, I was in the process of talking with an assisted living facility about doing some kind of programming there, and then COVID happened. So this is an area I want to go in more, to adapt the practice so that you don't need to be on the ground. Maybe you might still be reclining, but maybe at an elevated surface. I think this is also one of the limitations of Zoom, is that like we are not in the same space. So this would be an instance where like we need more of like a one-on-one, or we need to find time when we can be together. But the practice is not... it's very simple. You know, if you're comfortable sitting, if you're comfortable laying down, this is a practice that you can do. It is really intended to be for most bodies. I welcome people to adapt it to their needs, that the most important person they are practicing with is the person that they're in the same space with. So I'm here to guide you, but also to empower you to make choices. So that is a topic I would love to just like dig into more. So if anybody wants to write me about that, yeah.
You've got a lovely comment in the chat here as well from a lady who's 85 and with COVID-19, unfortunately, so get well soon, but so you have an older fan as well. Another, maybe just the last question before we have to wrap things up for today. As an artist, how do you differentiate the meaning between improvisation and choreography? What is the difference?
Yeah. Yeah, good question. I mean, maybe we don't have to. I mean, I feel like we're always improvising, you know. The act of performance has an element of improvisation to it. You know, sometimes I confuse myself. I'm performing my own choreography, but I feel like I'm improvising because I'm living in it. And these subtle shifts, these subtle choices that you're making, they're still choices. But yeah, typically, I mean, choreography is a memorized set of steps that are repeatable. And improvisation is stepping into the unknown and embracing what comes up, being responsive. I think that's why I love like partner improvisations so much, because I get to be responsive to other people. And I find that is such a helpful way to take the focus off of the self. I mean, if you're an artist, you know what it is to be in a room and be like, what am I gonna do? You know, that loneliness, that overwhelming feeling. And that comes up in mindfulness practices for me too. So that's why just having someone else there, just someone holding the space with me, being a witness for our shared experience. So we're both having individual experiences, but it's also shared. It's just a total game changer for me. So whether it's choreography, whether it's a mindfulness practice, I like having that sort of that companionship. Yeah.
I'm sure it can be a very long answer to that question as well.
True.
Behind lines. Beautiful. Well, thank you so much. Sadly, we're running out of time. Beautiful session, Gabrielle. Before we kind of go into announcements, would you let us know how people can get in touch with you and find out more about your work?
Yes, I'm super easy to find. You just Google my name. I'm on Instagram and Facebook. I'm very receptive to people reaching out and saying hi. You can reach me through my website, Restorative Contact. Don't be shy. You know, it's so nice to have a shared space. That's also a part of the practice, is that we do it together. We do it together.
Great. And I can see that you're on Linktree under your name, Gabrielle.
Yes.
Revlock.
Yeah.
So obviously, for everyone viewing this, you've discovered that there's so much great stuff and you've probably really enjoyed this session and maybe want to review it again. And I'm sure you're going to want to keep learning after the conference is over, working through the library at your own pace and being supported by learning lists, audio-only files so you can learn on the go, be guided and supported by your learning through the learning list, so you can discover what you want and where to go next. So now's really the time to upgrade if you're thinking about it, because the price doubles once the conference finishes. And an important word, if you work professionally in trauma, you can get a discount. Please just message us. And I believe the best address for that would be contact@theembodimentconference.org. If you can't afford to upgrade, but you'd still like to help us out, you can donate to the conference directly or support one of our charities, which you'll find on the website. And our tech host, Fabian, is hopefully typing all those links in the chat as I speak. Coming up next on this channel, we have EM Lifework, Body Harmony Self-Care with Emery M. Moore. You can stay connected with us on Facebook the Main Embodiment Conference Facebook page, and you can connect and network with other people joining this fantastic event through the coffee breaks by going via your portal. Before we go, one last word. If you could give us a sentence, please, Gabriella, your top tip on how to be more embodied.
Well, I guess I want to remind people that touch is available to you as an anchor to the present moment and to richer connections with yourself and others.
Thank you so much. Beautiful session.
My pleasure. And maybe I'll also jump on the coffee break if I can, because it's nice to see some folks. So
great. And thank you for those who came in the room and those who are watching live. Thank you all. And thank you, Fabian, our wonderful tech host. Have a good evening, afternoon, or morning, depending on where in the world you're joining us from.